come to play in the future. Well, after years of strong armed political pressure and propaganda, and because of his own power, persuasion, and manipulation, Adolf Hitler became the Chancellor of Germany in 1932. Under his regime, Germany experienced a resurgence in its economy. You know, it had suffered under the Great Depression period, and there was a lot of chaos and great inflation and a lot of angst throughout the country. But when he came into power, he was able to generate a lot of rapid growth, and he began building a very powerful military machine. If you read anything about history, it's just amazing what happened in Germany in a very, very short period of time. Well, Hitler boasted that his rule in Germany would last 1,000 years. 1,000 years. Well, it only lasted 12. 12 years. And during those 12 years, the amount of death and destruction was unspeakable that happened in Europe. More than 33 million Europeans are known to have lost their lives, and other estimates bring that up to 40 million. Closer to 40 million would be what would be probably more accurate. And the material destruction that took place in Europe was absolutely mind-boggling. Again, those who read history would attest to that. It's just unbelievable how much, you know, the cities were firebombed, air raids, shell fire, tank fire, street fighting, scorched earth policies were in place. You had these two major nations fighting each other, especially the Germans and the Russians, the Soviet Union. I mean, it was just death and destruction, unbelievable, no mercy. Unbelievable things happened. At the close of the war, Winston Churchill wrote this, and I quote, he said, "What is Europe now after the war ended? A rubble heap, a charnel house," meaning a tomb, "a breeding ground of pestilence and hate." What was World War II, you know, and the aftermath of that? And no more was this destruction evident than Germany itself. I mean, of course, they had done a lot of damage throughout the Soviet Union, but Germany was bombed round the clock by the Allies, daylight bombing by the Americans, nighttime bombing by the British. Tons and tons of ordnance were expended throughout that period. The nation from both east and west was invaded, and it just became a graveyard, a trash heap. You've seen pictures of Berlin, just row after row of houses, just hardly anything left, just like gravestones standing there in all the midst of all that rubble. It was so battered, by the end of the war, engineers estimated it would take 15 years just to clear the rubble from Berlin. At the first sight of Berlin, where 95% of the central city was in ruins, Lieutenant General Lucius Clay, the U.S. military governor of the American-occupied sectors in Germany, said this. He was appalled by this. He said this, "Wherever we look, we see devastation. It is like a city of the dead. Suffering and shock were visible in every face." Also, the end of the war saw the greatest and most agonizing cross-migration in human history. Some 50 million people were uprooted during that war, the terrible conflict, and the survivors from every European country struggled to go home or to try to find some secure haven for them and their families, or what was left of their families. And yes, all this and more was a result of a nation following one man. a man at the helm who drove his nation and all Europe totally into the ground. Now, the world commemorates the 71st anniversary of the end of that terrible war, but this question stands. Could it all happen again? Bible prophecy describes a time ahead that tells us that actually will happen again, and a whole lot worse. A powerful dictator will be at the helm of a European 10-nation governing bloc. The Bible is very clear about that. So today I'd like to look at this subject in the light of various scriptures to see what the Bible says about the coming beast of Revelation, that beast power we talk about, and the man who will ultimately be at its head. We don't know who that will be, but we know there will be. In doing so, we'll take a look at some various similarities and differences in comparing Adolf Hitler to the man who will lead the beast power in the future. We'll take a look at that. We'll also attempt to compare various aspects of Hitler's Germany, Hitler's Nazi Europe, with the coming world-dominated realm of the beast. The sermon title is Harbinger of the Coming Beast Power, Harbinger of the Coming Beast Power. So to begin, let's go to Daniel. Let's go to Daniel chapter 2, verse 31. Daniel chapter 2, verse 31. The Bible speaks, of course, in prophetic language about an incredible future time when an enormous and dominant political an economic system will hold sway over vast numbers of people and territory. Before discussing that, however, let's step back in history. Let's take a look at several biblical prophecies so as to gain understanding as to what is to come, what is ahead in our day. And it may not be that far ahead. We just don't know. Here in Daniel 2, we read about the Babylonian king Nebuchadnezzar. He saw a dream. In this dream, he saw a great vision. And the eternal God, through the prophet Daniel, revealed to the king what this represented. Here in Daniel 2, verse 31, we read, "You, O king, were watching and beheld a great image. This great image, whose splendor was excellent, stood before you, and its form was awesome. This image's head was of fine gold, its chest and arms of silver, and belly and thighs of bronze, its legs of iron, its feet partly of iron and partly of clay." And again, we won't go through all the details of this. We've been through that before. But these represent, down through time, humanly contrived and satanically influenced political and governing bodies. We know that. Verse 40, Daniel further discusses what is described as the fourth kingdom. Verse 40, "And the fourth kingdom shall be as strong as iron, insomuch as iron breaks in pieces and shatters everything. And the iron, and like iron that crushes, that kingdom will break in pieces and crush all the others." Verse 42 explains that the toes were partly of iron and partly of clay, and in other words, they were both strong and weak at the same time. And that's because iron and clay don't mix very well together, as we know. And Daniel 7 discusses a vivid, very frightening dream that Daniel himself had. So Daniel, God gave the interpretation to the king, but then Daniel himself had a very vivid dream. He experienced these four beasts that seemed to come up out of the sea. He describes them as a lion with wings and a great bear with ribs in its mouth, and a leopard with four heads, and a very powerful and dreadful and terrible fourth beast. And that fourth beast was different than all the other beasts. You'd never seen anything like this. It had great iron teeth. Let's go several chapters ahead to Daniel chapter 7, verse 19 now. Daniel 7, verse 19. So Daniel was very curious about this beast. It was so fearsome, so terrible, so strange. He'd never seen anything like that. Again, he was seeing this in a vision, in a dream, very vivid. So Daniel continues here in verse 19. Daniel 7, verse 19. And I wished to know the truth about this fourth beast, which was different from all the others, exceedingly dreadful, with its teeth of iron and its nails of bronze, which devoured, broke in pieces, and trampled the residue with its feet. Verse 23. Thus he said, the fourth beast shall be a fourth kingdom on earth, which shall be different from all other kingdoms, and shall devour the whole earth, trample it, and break it in pieces. Not just a limited area, but the whole world will be affected by this great beast. Revelation 13, if you go there, Revelation 13. Revelation 13 speaks of the Apostle John's vision. And it's of the same beast, this beast-like creature. But in this case, John sees it in a different, he doesn't see it as four separate entities, four separate beasts, but as one sort of, you might call it, composite beast. So both prophecies of Daniel 7 that we just read and Revelation 13 speak of this identical, massively powerful, dominant human government, this structure that has been built up, that is ahead of us today. Revelation 13, verse 1, it says, and then I stood on the sand of the sea, John writes, and I saw a beast rising up out of the sea, having seven heads and ten horns, and on his horns ten crowns, and on his heads a blasphemous name. Now the beast which I saw was like a leopard. His feet were like the feet of a bear, and his mouth were the mouth of a lion. This is this composite, terrible beast. Now look at this. The dragon gave him his power. That's very important to note. His throne and his great authority. The dragon did this. And I saw one of his heads as if it had been mortally wounded, and his deadly wound was healed. And all the world marveled and followed the beast, his sway over a large portion of the earth. By the time John wrote, 600 years after Daniel, the first four empires, including Babylon, Persia, Greece, had been succeeded by the Roman Empire. Those first three came the Roman Empire. Where Daniel had focused on those separate entities, what did God allow John to see? Well, he saw this, again, this one continual structure that had started with Babylon. He saw the various empires as merely different heads of the same creature. That's what he saw. The same prophetic biblical system, biblically described system, a system that continues until the time of the second coming of Jesus Christ. Those of us who have studied prophecy through the years understand that this scarlet beast is prophesied to rise up. It will be the final powerful resurrection of the Roman Empire. All started with Babylon, but this fourth beast will be unbelievably great and strong in the eyes of human beings and the devil himself. Revelation 17, verse 10, you don't need to turn there. It tells us that this fourth kingdom would die, yet it would be resurrected time and time and time again, a total of seven times throughout history. Let me just read this to you. Revelation 17:10. There were also seven kings. Five have fallen, one is, and the other has not yet come. And when he comes, he must continue for a short time. So you and I are now awaiting the final resurrection of that overwhelmingly powerful and influential government system. And the core of it is operating right now in Europe. The G20 is meeting right now. The European heads of state are all meeting there in Germany right now, today, and other nations as well. But that system there is the core of it, the foundation of it is already in place. It's not been completely formed yet. It's in embryonic form. But the final configuration of that awesome global power is yet to be determined, but the Bible gives us some very important clues about it, its composition. Let's go back to Daniel 2 now, Daniel 2, verse 41. Daniel 2, verse 41. Here we see something very important about this final resurrected governmental system. What will be the nature, its nature, of this last revival of the Roman Empire? Here we read in Daniel 2, verse 41. Whereas you saw the feet and toes partly of potter's clay and partly of iron, the kingdom shall be divided. Yet the strength of the iron shall be in it. And it's important to know the strength of the iron is there. Just as you saw iron mixed with ceramic clay. Iron is very strong, powerful. It's going to dominate in this empire that's coming. So it's going to be strong, yet there's problems with it as well. It's going to be weak and it's going to be brittle. It's only going to last for a short time, which is fortunate, which is blessed from God. If it continued on, it would be a nightmare continually. So this union will be strong. It's going to be weak and brittle. Various national identities, various ethnic and local rivalries will assure that this last powerful human system will be loose-knit. It's not going to be just, we got it all together. There's going to be upsets. It's going to be short-lived, as I mentioned. But while it lasts, it's going to be extremely powerful. It's going to dominate the world as the world has never seen. So that's a bit of background right now as to where we are now in Bible prophecies. What is ahead of us in the future? So as I mentioned earlier, Adolf Hitler and his National Socialist Party, called the Nazi Party, came to power in Germany 84 years ago. Another man at the head of a resurrected Roman system will arise, yet in a future unknown time. We don't know when that'll happen. But we are reminded by prophecy to be ready spiritually. That's the whole point. Be ready spiritually. Be building up our spiritual lives, our holy. God says, build up your most holy faith. Do that. This is why we are given this knowledge, and also that we can warn people in this world. So again, there are similarities, as I mentioned earlier, and there are differences between Hitler and his Nazi empire and this coming Roman leader in this beast power. So let's take a look at this. Let's ask a question. Could it be that Hitler, I'm just speculating here, it's my own ideas about this, this is not doctrine or anything like that, but I'm just speculating a bit. Could it be that Hitler and his Nazi empire was simply a satanic prototype of this coming bestial system? Was Hitler's Third Reich, his European empire, kind of a dry run? A lab experiment, perhaps, a warm-up, a practice run for Satan the devil as he prepared to unleash his massive iron-toothed end-time bestial system. Just a thought, just something to think about. When you read history, you see parallels, to see how things could be done better. I mean, Hitler had his ovens, he had his Nazi, his concentration camps, his death camps. Will these be repeated in even a greater and massive scale in the future? Just something to think about. Was it Satan's desire to kind of flesh out the weaknesses of Hitler's structure so that these same mistakes wouldn't be made that Hitler made? You know, a major difference I see is the way power is obtained over Europe. You know, Hitler, how did he obtain power? He sent his shock troops, his Luftwaffe, you know, his air force into European countries beginning in September 1939 against Poland. He took it over by force of arms all throughout Europe. And yet this beast will have European power basically handed to him. You think about that. That seems to be what could be very possible and likely. Let's go to Revelation 17, verse 12. Revelation 17, see what the scriptures tell us. Perhaps a crisis, a huge crisis of monumental magnitude will develop in the world to warrant sort of a martial law or tyrannical power being granted to these 10 strong leaders in Europe. I often thought that the economic system could fall. You know, United States is the greatest economy in the world. What would happen if our economy fell? That would send shockwaves throughout the entire world. And the economies of every nation would be affected by that. Could that be it? I don't know. I've often thought of that. But what is going to bring this system to the fore? So these 10 leaders are going to give their power and authority to this one leader. They're going to hand over to this super powerful dictator their power. What is going to cause that to happen? Something dreadful has got to happen in the world, I think. Anyway, Revelation 17, verse 12 says, the 10 horns which you saw are 10 kings who have received no kingdom as yet, and they receive authority for 1 hour as kings with the beast. So they will have a certain amount of authority, kind of like governors of states or regions, but they're going to hand over their war making, their foreign policy ability to this super dictator. These are of one mind, all these 10 kings and this bestial leader are of one mind, it says here. And they will give their power and authority to this beast, to the beast. Again, unlike Hitler, who conquered his neighbors through military power, this dictator is literally offered autocratic power and authority. Now, a little bit more speculation on my part, not doctrine, just my idea here. Did Satan somehow learn that there was a better way to conquer the system, the world? If so, Satan was intrinsically involved at the very beginnings of the European Common Market, which began with the Treaty of Rome in 1957. And again, Satan's involved in everything anyway, so most likely he did that. Now, another difference between Nazi Germany and the coming leader of this beast power is relationships with the papacy. There is still controversy today as to how much Pope Pius XII was involved with Nazi Germany prior to and during the Second World War. There's a book written in 1999 by John Cornwell called Hitler's Pope. It describes how Pope Pius XII remained silent in the face of Nazi aggression and, of course, the extermination of the Jews and Gypsies and other political opponents in concentration camps and extermination camps. Now, other writers dispute this idea. They explain that Pius XII actually attacked Nazi policies against the Jews, and that his efforts resulted in saving many Jewish lives. Some have estimated 850,000 Jews were saved by the actions of the Roman Catholic Church. So there's differences of opinion as to history. Anyway, it appears that if there was any relationship between Hitler and the Pope, it was probably very quiet and secret. It wasn't out in the open. It wasn't overt and obvious. On the other hand, this future leader of this coming European beast power will be a strong comrade in arms with what the Bible describes as the false prophet. They will link arms and they will work together. Revelation 13, verse 11. If you go back a few chapters, Revelation 13, verse 11, we'll read about that here. Revelation 13, verse 11. Then I saw another beast coming up out of the earth, another beast. And he had two horns like a lamb, and he spoke like a dragon. And he exercises all the authority of the first beast, this first super dictator, in his presence, and causes the earth and those who dwell in it to worship the first beast. So this second beast is going to cause the world to worship this super dictator, this bestial leader. Now, speaking of this second beast that comes up, verse 13, he performs great signs so that he even makes fire come down from heaven on the earth in the sight of men. And he deceives those who dwell on the earth by those signs which he was granted to do in the sight of the beast, telling those who dwell on the earth to make an image to the beast who was wounded by the sword and lived. He was granted power to give breath to the image of the beast. And the image of the beast should both speak and cause as many as who would not worship the image of the beast to be killed. So if you will not submit to the authority of these two bestial leaders, you are subject to death. A lot of fear. Now again, here's a little more speculation. Did Satan learn that to produce a stronger kingdom, he needed to team up the leader of the beast power with the false prophet? Well, he did that in the past. Satan did that with Justinian in 554 AD, Charlemagne in 800 AD, Otto the Great in 962, Charles V in 1530, and Napoleon in 1804. The leaders of these nations worked hand in glove with the leader of the great false church at that time. So the harlot had ridden the scarlet Babylonian-ish beast each of those five resurrections of the Roman Empire. However, under Hitler, there was no overt interaction between him and the papacy. In fact, it almost looks like they were at loggerheads in some cases, as we discussed. So, anyway, let's examine this coming future diabolical empire. Let's take a look at that. Satan will be behind it. The Bible's very clear about that. Satan will likely foment and intensify the political and economic fragmentation of nations all around the globe. We have a pretty good system right now that's in place. I mean, it's not working perfectly, but we don't have any huge wars going on or anything like that. There are regional wars that are taking place. There's free flow of goods and services generally around the country, around the world right now in many cases. But that day is coming when something's going to happen. It could be, as I mentioned, the disintegration of the United States as the super, super big economy in the world. This breakup could be replaced with this unifying factor of religion. You have everyone right now enjoying life, not everyone, but in many cases, there's secularism that's kind of, you know, everybody just do your own thing, as we heard in the sermonette. Well, that may not happen in the future. That may go away. And religion may take a great a greater place in the world, and the Bible indicates that will happen. Right now we see even a worldwide ecumenical movement that began with Pope John Paul a number of years ago in the 80s, and it's continued. It's not out in the open. It's sort of undercover right now, but it's still there. That could increase at a greater pace in the future as this false religion, this false Christian religion develops even greater power, and this super state emerges in the future. And a lot of people seeing these signs, fire come down from heaven, other types of miracles that you wouldn't think of, are going to begin to believe. They will be caught up in a religious frenzy, and their economies may be shrinking or in trouble. It might be a Great Depression. Who knows? Other wars might take place, and people are going to look for something to hang on to. So let's turn now to 2 Thessalonians 2, verse 8. Again, this second beast is going to be sort of a mirror image of the secular beast. This false prophet will have a system that's very similar, and they're going to work hand in hand. In verse 3, we're going to 2 Thessalonians verse 2, chapter 2, verse 8, but in verse 3 it talks about this man. He's called the man of sin, the son of perdition, meaning damnation. He's called the lawless one. Lawless against who? Against God. 2 Thessalonians 2, verse 8. And then shall this that wicked be revealed, whom the Lord shall consume with the spirit of his mouth, and shall destroy with the brightness of his coming, even him, this false prophet, whose coming is after the working of Satan, with all power, signs and lying wonders. So God's going to wipe this out. Christ is going to wipe this out, but not before all these events are going to be all around the world and people have their eyes open, so to speak, to maybe what religion could do for them. Let me read verse 9 in the Amplified Bible. I just read it here, New King James, but let me just read it to you from this Amplified Bible. I think it makes it a little bit more clear. The coming of the lawless one, the Antichrist, is through the activity and working of Satan, and will be attended by great power, with all sorts of miracles and signs and delusive marvels, all of them lying wonders. So do we know what the church is built on? Are we solid with what we know? Are we sticking to it? Are we making sure that we're studying, we know what's true, and we're not going to be caught up in this kind of thing that's coming in the future? So Satan is going to be behind all this. He's going to be behind this future political system, this economic system that's going to rise up. And he, this beast, and this false prophet will, again, work in harmony with this deceptive religious system. Verse 8 tells us this, and then the lawless one will be revealed, whom the Lord will consume with the breath of his mouth and destroy with the brightness of his coming. So that's the good news. But we're going to have to live through some very difficult times in the future. So we looked at two areas of differences between Hitler, his Nazi empire, and the beast of this coming super state. Now let's look at a few scriptures that show similarities. You know, some have this false notion that Hitler obtained power in Germany by a coup d'etat, that he overthrew the government. Well, that's not correct. He did not overthrow the government. Hitler came to power in Germany by democratic elections in 1932. As early as 1925, Hitler began to run for national office, backed, of course, by his Nazi party. And in the good times of the 20s, Hitler and his party were soundly rejected by the voters, but by the time of the 29 1929 U.S. stock market crash, and the beginning of the Great Depression, worldwide economic repercussions caused Germany to plummet. I mean, they were under paying great reparations to France and other nations, and they just didn't have the wherewithal to build up their economy. So they suffered probably more than any other nation as a result of this economic system that came about, this crash that took place. So because of those harsh times, people were more open to extreme means of dealing with the growing political and economic problems there in Germany. In the election of 1932, the Nazi Party gained enough votes that 230 Nazi candidates obtained seats in the Reichstag, the House of Representatives there in Germany. In that campaign, Hitler persuaded and cajoled the German people, and he was blaming all the problems of the Depression on outside enemies, the United States, and especially the Jews and the communists. These were all at fault, and the people began to believe it. They wanted something who would be a strong person who would deal with these situations. So Hitler enticed voters. You know, he was quite a speaker. If you ever heard him speak, it's like, if you even don't know German, it's like, boy, he just kind of grabbed people's attention. And he was very powerful speaker. So he enticed voters. He said, I've got answers to all your problems. And he promised different things to different groups. I never heard that before, right? Politicians. They never do that in our country, right? Well, to businessmen, he promised that he would control the trade unions and deal with the communists. To the workers, he promised good jobs. And the people, they were taken in by his charisma. They believed him. They, you know, his flattery, his persuasiveness, his arguments. They believed this, and they voted the Nazi Party into office. And again, as a result, Hitler, as the top leader of the party, he was appointed chancellor, the second highest position in the German government under President Paul von Hindenburg at the time. Once Hitler was in office, however, he manipulated the people, the politicians, the events, and there's a lot that went on there. We won't have time to discuss it. To place himself in dictatorial control. Let's go to Daniel 11, verse 21. Now, what does the Bible say about this coming bestial leader? You know, just as Hitler came in peaceably and obtained power in Germany by elections and buttered up and smooth-talked people with promises, false promises, so will this is a similarity now, so will this coming leader of this European superstate. Daniel 11, verse 21, let's read it. And in his place shall arise a vile person, to whom they will not give the honor of royalty, but he shall come in peaceably and seize the kingdom by intrigue. Of course, how this event will take place for this vile person remains to be seen. Stay tuned, as we like to say. We'll be watching world events. That's important for us to do, is keep an eye on what's going on out there. So that's one similarity. Let's take a look at another one. In September 1939, the German army attacked and defeated Poland. You know, they did that in just 24 days. In the spring and early summer of 1940, Denmark, Norway, Holland, Belgium, and France were all forced to surrender just within a very, very short period of time. The Nazi war machine just rolled into these countries and took over. In 1941, German armies conquered the Balkans, North Africa, and huge areas of the Soviet Union. See a map, and you see how the tentacles just reach out. You see a history map of that. Just unbelievable what they were able to do in a very, very short time. And Hitler's generals. These are Prussian military. Professionals, military professionals. They were amazed by this man's military ability. He was just a corporal during World War I. He appeared to them to be a military genius. Even prior to his military successors, Hitler's bold gamble to occupy and militarize the Rhineland between Germany and France, that took place in March 1936. He also annexed Austria peaceably in 1938. And even then, those generals were amazed that Hitler was so bold that he would be able to do this and not have a shot fired at all. They thought that France would stand up against this, that Austria would resist. They didn't. Didn't happen. In fact, General Erwin Rommel, the famous Desert Fox, he was initially unimpressed with Hitler until he saw how effective he was at planning and strategy. Hitler seemed to be militarily invincible in those days, so he was able to convince the Prussian general staff that they got a winner here, and they're going to be able to roll and do everything that Hitler wanted them to do. And the people were also in awe of this. You know, they had their pride, their self-respect back as a nation. In fact, I've read that women would even faint at the sight of Hitler, and men would, they just would tremble in awe. And that's how he was looked upon, that kind of a leader in Germany, just prior to most of our lives here. Revelation 13, verse 4. Revelation 13, verse 4. How about the coming leader of the beast power? What does the Bible say about his war-making ability, his military prowess? Look at this here in Revelation 13, verse 4. So they worshiped the dragon who gave authority to the beast. The dragon, see that? He's behind it all. Satan the devil's behind all of this. We don't want to separate the beast from the dragon. The dragon knows his time is short. Satan knows it. So this whole system is going to be so satanic and so evil because it's Satan just out there plain as day almost. He'll be behind the scenes, but it'll be very evident. And they worship the beast, saying, look at this, who is like the beast? Who is able to make war with him? Shades of Hitler are coming in the future. So we can see the similarities there. This beast leader will be practically idolized like Hitler, for his great power, his mental capabilities. And he will be so strong. He will boast of his greatness. Another resemblance between Hitler's regime and the coming beast power is the area of economic control. The Nazi government reacted to the threat of inflation by declaring a general price freeze in 1936. From that action, the Nazi government was driven to expand the role of the government. Before that, a lot of companies would just run things, but the government stepped in and began to control things more. They didn't take over all these businesses. They let them run, but they had their tentacles inside of each of these companies and basically told them what to do. So they directed the economy through the government and reduced market forces as a result. That can only work for a while, but it worked. Through private property, again, was not nationalized. but its use was more and more determined by the government rather than the owners, as I mentioned. And at the same time, workers in Germany found that their rights at work were gradually taken away. They either did what the government told them to do, or they were not going to work. So what's the choice? You know, that's why the communists were disbanded, because they wanted, you know, all the proletariat to rise up and fight against the government. Well, they were crushed, and a lot of those communists were actually killed and sent to concentration camps. Trade unions were banned, and men were forced to go into labor service at 18, and that lasted for 6 months. And again, that was one of the means that the Nazis were able to cut in unemployment in Germany at the time. And most women were forced out of employment. They were forced to stay home, and they were to be creating more babies for the Nazi empire. Again, what about this coming revival of this Roman system, this Babylonish system controlled by Satan the devil? Let's go ahead a few more verses here. Revelation 13, verse 16. Revelation 13, verse 16. This bestial leader, causes all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and slave, to receive a mark on their right hand or on their foreheads, and that no one may buy or sell except one has the mark or the name of the beast or the number of his name. Control will be ultimate. That time is coming when there'll be complete economic control. It's going to be leveled against all people under this bestial system. So again, people will be unable to buy or sell unless they are in sync with the beast, and probably religiously, because again, he'll be locking arms with the false prophet at that time. And as we know, there's a particular commandment that will cause God's people to have problems buying and selling. That's the fourth commandment, the day of the Sabbath, which we keep today. If you don't follow the beast's his orders to work 7 days a week or whatever days he demands, you decide you're going to take off on the Sabbath, you're not going to work, well, you're not going to eat. Well, God will take care of his people, but that's going to be the orders. So the vast majority of people in Europe there will gladly receive this mark, whatever this is. And it's my own personal opinion that it is this keeping the Sabbath. That's what it will be. That'll be the mark. You better show up to church, you know, on Sunday. And if you're not there, we're going to count heads, you know. I mean, that's my speculation here. It could be something else, but anyway. So that people are going to be gladly accepting this mark to avoid problems. They want to conduct their personal business. They want to eat. They want to take care of business. So that's another parallel that's ahead. Another one involves Hitler and the beast and the occult. Hitler moved to Vienna, Austria as a youth. And I've read his biography, and he spent a lot of time there in Vienna. He wanted to become an artist. He applied to the Vienna Academy of Arts, and his sketches, his paintings were rejected. They weren't up to standards. Next, he applied at the Vienna School of Architecture, and again, he was rejected. He's a young man, you know, and he just felt totally rejected, totally out of it. He wanted to move to the big city to show how he was this great artist. Author Trevor Ravenscroft says that the young Hitler was, quote, unable to make friends. Hitler became day by day a more solitary and embittered figure. He was rejected for what he felt he could do. in his quest for power to change his plight, he turned to the occult. He began this by spending time at the Hofburg Free Library there in Vienna, reading books on the occult and Eastern religions. The occult seemed to him to offer the power that he was looking for, the self-respect. He found it there. In his book, quoted by John Tolan, wrote a very famous author, he wrote this book entitled Adolf Hitler, and I quote here from volume 1, page 52, Adolf Hitler would sit for hours discussing economics, religion, astrology, and the occult. Hitler wanted to enhance his occult powers. He found there was power there. A used book dealer named Ernest Pretzky introduced him to a psychedelic drug which contained mescaline. And this ingredient produced clairvoyant powers and visions and led Hitler to believe that he had tapped into supernatural powers that he could use for his own purposes. After 4 years in Vienna, Hitler left and he went to Munich in Germany. There he became involved with others who were dedicated to the pursuit of the occult, who were searching for this power. Then after World War I, Hitler was a corporal in the army. He became involved in the German Workers' Party, which was later named the National Socialist Party, or Nazis. And by the way, that was just a tiny party at the time. It was maybe 6 members in it. And Hitler came in and he was looking for some way to increase his self-confidence besides the occult. And he basically began giving speeches, and all these members, who was this tiny little party, they gradually gave him more roles in speaking, and he started adding new members to this little tiny party. And it's interesting that in studying this, all these members of the German Workers' Party were Satanists themselves. They were involved in the occult. So this led Hitler into even more deeper levels of occult worship. In fact, Dietrich Eckart, he's an occultist himself and editor-in-chief of the National Socialist Propaganda Public of the National Socialist Party Propaganda Publication. He stated this before his death in 1923. This is early on in Hitler's part there in Munich. He said, I quote, "I have initiated him," speaking about Hitler, "into the secret doctrine, opened his centers in vision, and given him the means of communication with the powers. I have influenced history more than any other German." So from on this point on, Hitler may well have been possessed by demonic powers, even as early as early 1920s there. In fact, Eckart reportedly told Hitler that he had received a spirit message that he was to prepare a man who would conquer the world and lead the Aryan race to glory. And Hitler saw himself as that individual. He was given adulation by these workers. He became the top leader in that party. And people began to flow to him because of his speeches and his prejudices against Jews and others. Now, some may ask, did any of Hitler's associates think he was demonically controlled? It's interesting. The answer is yes. In a book by Gerald Schuster, entitled Hitler, the Occult Messiah, Hermann Rauschning, one of Hitler's associates from Danzig, Germany, reportedly said this, quote, "One cannot help but think of him as a medium. Beyond any doubt, Hitler was possessed by forces outside himself." So again, many historians have noted how Hitler's SS was more of an occult fraternity than a military organization. So Hitler's deputy Führer, Rudolf Hess, Gestapo chief Heinrich Himmler, and others in the Nazi party were also deeply interested in and involved in the occult. Let's go to Revelation 16, verse 13, a couple chapters ahead. Revelation 16, verse 13. What about this coming bestial system and its leader? What will be this leader's involvement with satanic influence and power? Revelation 16, verse 13. John is seeing this in vision. John the apostle. And I saw three unclean spirits like frogs coming out of the mouth of the dragon, Satan the devil, out of the mouth of the beast, out of the beast, and out of the mouth of the false prophet. So unclean spirits will inhabit or possess both the beast and this false prophet. Again, time, Satan knows his time is short. He's got a little bit of time to get this thing done, to try to destroy the entire human race and everything in it. 2 Thessalonians 2, verse 8, if you go there. Let's go back. We'll go back to the book of Revelation shortly, but we need to read this scripture here. Awesome. I mean, you think awesome and diabolical and dark, the darkness of the demonic system. It's going to sway millions and millions of people. Look at our society, how Mr. Collin just mentioned how more and more it's becoming more secular. People are opening their eyes, to opening their minds to these sexual perversions that are out there today. 2 Thessalonians 2, verse 8. And then the lawless one will be revealed, whom the Lord will consume with the breath of his mouth and destroy with the brightness of his coming. The coming of the lawless one is according to the working of Satan with all power, signs, and lying wonders. I mentioned that before, but this is so important to get to realize that this is all going to be controlled by Satan the devil. Satan will be intrinsic in this coming final human governmental structure that's ahead of us. Let's go back again to Revelation 12 now. Revelation 12. Satan himself, this dragon, will foment his bestial armies to do something terrible. They're going to hunt down and try to destroy the people of God. That's you and me. Revelation 12, verse 16. But the earth helped the woman, and the earth helped, opened its mouth, and swallowed up the flood which the dragon had spewed out of his mouth. And the dragon was enraged with the woman. Okay, so God protects some of his people. But then this enrages the dragon, Satan the devil. And he went out. This is what he does. He went out to make war with the rest of her offspring, who keep the commandments of God and have the testimony of Jesus Christ. It's going to be a terrible time. So it's something we need to be facing and dealing with right now, knowing that this is there. It should draw us even closer to God. We should make sure that we're not being so caught up in all the other things that are going on, but that our spiritual life is number one. And that's the important thing. Let's look at one more parallel now between the Nazi empire and the coming empire of the beast, that of slave labor. Nazi foreign policy consisted of mass deportations and mass enslavement. This was a strategy. It was a way of dealing with people that were enemies of the Nazi regime. It was a strategy of underfeeding them, not giving them enough to eat, overworking them, foreign laborers, Jews, others, undesirables. And it was a policy, a strategy of subjecting them to degradation and brutality. This was not just something that has happened. This was a policy that was instituted from the very top of the Nazi empire. It separated husbands and wives, children from parents. It imposed conditions so inhumane that countless numbers of people perished as a result. You're not getting enough to eat. You're being overworked. You don't have sanitary conditions. I mean, this was a policy by the Nazis. The Nazis forced foreign workers and prisoners to make armaments, and to be those would be used against their own countries. And if they didn't comply, they would die. In a speech delivered to a group of German SS military leaders on October 4th, 1943, SS General Heinrich Himmler stated this, and I quote, "What happens to a Russian, to a Czech, does not interest me in the slightest. Whether nations live in prosperity or starve to death interests me only insofar as we need them as slaves. Whether 10,000 Russian females fall down from exhaustion while digging an anti-tank ditch interests me only insofar as the anti-tank ditch for Germany is finished." How's that for mercy? There is none there. There wasn't any. Now, what about the future? What about this bestial leader that's coming? Let's go to Daniel 11, verse 43. Daniel 11, verse 43. "This empire of the beast will be vast, it will be widespread, and it will be filthy rich." I mean, it's going to be very prosperous for that very short time that it'll operate. Not only there in Europe, but in distant locations as well. Those who are allied with this bestial system, and there will be plenty of allies, you can bet. Daniel 11, verse 43 says, "He shall have power over the treasures of gold and silver, and over the precious things of Egypt. Also the Libyans and the Ethiopians will follow at his heels." And that's just a sampling of some of the nations that the Bible describing here, but you can imagine the other nations that will line up to be a part of this entire system. Hold your place there in Daniel, if you would, and just turn to Revelation 18, verse 13 now. Revelation 18, verse 13. The previous verse, verse 12, talks about the riches the beast power will produce, that he will possess. Verse 13 now continues discussing these goods, but it shows that this empire is going to gain them by a nefarious means, and that is by slavery, slave labor. Revelation 18, verse 13, describing this economic system with its prosperity, "And cinnamon and incense, fragrant oil and frankincense, wine and oil, fine flour and wheat and cattle and sheep and horses and chariots, and," look at this, "bodies and souls of men." They will be trading human beings. There'll be slavery. They'll be part of this whole system. Let's go back to Daniel 11, verse 33 now. Daniel 11, verse 33. "So slavery and captivity will not be limited to people of various lands, but it will even affect the people of God." Now, we're getting the full overview here today. It's not we're all going to be protected immediately. It's going to be tough. It's going to be hard to deal with. And we don't know what's going to happen, but the idea is God tells us these things so that we stay close to him and we're not fearful. We just go about our business. We do what we have to do, but we stay close to God, and that's got to be the number one thing we're here to do. But it's going to affect, these events are going to affect the people of God. Just as in ancient Egypt, the Israelites had to go through all those plagues, God saw them through that, protected them, maybe not every one of them. But here in Daniel 11, verse 33, it says, "And those of the people who understand," that's us, people of God, "shall instruct many." I'm going to be teaching people even at that, during those difficult times. "Yet, for many days they shall fall by the sword, by flame, by captivity, and plundering." This is going to happen to the people of God, some of them, as we described earlier. So again, it's going to be a very difficult time for the church of God. And God will even allow some of his people to die in captivity. Verse 35, "And some of those who of understanding shall fall, to refine them." We're going to be purified, it says. We're going to be refined. "To purify them, make them white." God is going to prepare us through these trials so that we can be in his family. Well, there's a reason for it. "And some of those of understanding shall fall, to refine them, purify them, and make them white until the time of the end, because it is still for the appointed time." So yes, slavery and death will be an essential part of this bestial system. And if we thought it was bad under Hitler, we've got another thing coming. It's going to be a whole lot worse. So let's be prepared spiritually. That's the whole point. Finally, prophecy explains that very dark and dreadful times are coming. We don't know when this is going to happen. We've been thinking it could happen for years and years now. We don't know. Maybe off, some of us may not be alive when these things happen. We don't know. But the beast will, so to speak, be brought back from the dead. The seventh and final resurrection of this monster power will soon, or sometime in the near future, rise out of a sea of people there in the heart of Europe. As Hitler himself caused havoc throughout the countries of Europe, this coming super state and its bestial leader will wreak utter devastation upon the entire world. As did Adolf Hitler, this coming leader will possess immense power and will consider himself invincible. He will be possessed by dark, treacherous, satanic forces that are opposing God's will. Next, here in Daniel 11, verse 36, we read, "Then the king shall do according to his own will. He shall exalt and magnify himself above every god, shall speak blasphemies against the God of gods, and shall prosper till the wrath has been accomplished, for what has been determined shall be done. But his end will finally come, thankfully." One last scripture, let's go, if you would, to Revelation 19, verse 20. Revelation 19, verse 20. The end of this beast's reign of terror will come at the second coming of Jesus Christ. Revelation 19, verse 20. "Then the beast was captured, and with him the false prophet, who worked signs in his presence, by which he deceived those who received the mark of the beast and those who worshipped his image. These two were cast alive into the lake of fire, burning with brimstone." So again, let's prepare spiritually. Let's constantly study and pray, and let's have that relationship with God, and let's really love our fellow brethren, because that day is coming, and may God speed the time of Jesus Christ's second coming.